Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, The Independent, New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Tonight You Belong to Me, is brought to us by a group called The Bird and the Bee. We'll be hearing more about and from romantic love rock music later on in today's program, and they'll close it out as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again from www.classicbands.com. Question number one, Chuck Berry originally wanted to become a professional what? Was it A, a dancer, B, photographer, C, lion tamer, or D, boxer? Question number two, what was the original title of the Beatles' ninth album? Hint, this double disc album from 1968 includes this song, I Will, a love song.
Knows how long I've loved you, you know I love you still. Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to, I will. For if I ever saw you, I didn't catch your name. But it never really mattered, I will always feel the same. Love you forever and forever.
So what was the original title of this Beatles album, their ninth album, a double disc album from 1968 that includes this love song? Answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. But first, these transitions articles. This first transitions article comes to us from the magazine The Week, February 11, 2011, entitled, The Motown Star Who Pleaded with the Postman. This is a tribute to Gladys Horton, 1945 to 2011. When 15-year-old Gladys Horton rounded up a handful of her high school friends to form a singing group in the Detroit suburb of Inkster, the five girls called themselves the Cassinettes, a playful contraction of can't sing yet. The girls entered a talent contest and lost, but one of their high school teachers thought they were good enough to recommend to a friend who had recently launched a record company in Detroit called Motown. Under a new name, the Marvelettes, in the summer of 1961, the group released their debut single, Please Mr. Postman, with Horton singing lead and a young Marvin Gaye on drums. The song shot to number one and the Marvelettes were put on the road, said RollingStone.com. Traveling was so harsh for the black teenagers that one of the Marvelettes had a nervous breakdown. Despite the difficulties, the group's success helped transform Motown into a major record label and paved the way for the Ronettes, the Supremes, and all girl groups that followed. One of the Marvelettes helped write Please Mr. Postman, changing a friend's bluesy foundation into pure pop. It was later recorded by the Beatles and again by the Carpenters in 1974 and became one of only eight songs to top the Hot 100 by two different artists, said HollywoodReporter.com. The Marvelettes in 1962 had a pair of top 20 hits with Playboy and Beechwood 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, and had six top 20 singles in all. The Marvelettes predated the era when Motown honcho Berry Gordy packaged hits and put his acts through charm school to groom them into marketable stars, said the Los Angeles Times. As unpolished as they were the first queens at the label, a position that led to some conflicts with their rivals. In one incident, the Supremes, Diana Ross, punctuated a bout of bickering with Horton by driving a car in her direction and screeching to a halt with little room to spare. But when Horton gave birth to a son with cerebral palsy in 1967, she stopped performing in order to care for him. "I'm an orphan, so I don't have any family. I could leave him with while I was carrying on with my singing career," Horton recalled in a 1985 interview. As one of her former bandmates, Catherine Schaffner, recalled, "the group would never have formed without Horton's impetus. We only started singing together because Gladys asked us," she said. Once again, Gladys Horton died just recently. The final Transitions article is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com from their series Today in Rock History. And today is the weekend of February 12 and 13. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1972, Al Green, Let's Stay Together, that Valentine's Day love song. And Celine Dion, The Power of Love, from 1994 was number one. If you were born on February 12, you share a B-Day with Ray Mazurak of The Doors. He was born on that day back in 1935. And Shanae Phillips, Wilson Phillips, who was born on February 12, 1968. Or if you were born on February 13, you share a birthday with Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 tons. He was born on that day back in 1919. And Peter Tork of the Monkees, born on that day, February 13, 1946. And finally, Peter Gabriel, February 13, 1950. Miscellany in rock history this weekend, well, back 55 years ago, Screaming Jay Hawkins records I Put a Spell on You. And 2 years later this weekend, it was the Monotones releasing Book of Love. Back in 1968, Jimi Hendrix was awarded honorary high school diploma. He had dropped out at age 14. Back in 1972, Michael Jackson's solo debut, Got to Be There, was released. And 16 years later this weekend, Michael Jackson buys Neverland, a ranch in Santa Ynez, California. And finally, back in 1989, Tiny Tim stands as a candidate for mayor of New York City.
Oh, tiptoe by the garden, by the garden, under the low tree, come tiptoe through the tulips with me. Lady, in flowers we'll stray, we'll keep the shower.
Tiny Tim, his love song to Miss Vicky, Valentine's Day. In local rock news, we see this article from the News and Observer, published on the 4th of February, 2011, simply called Rock Picks. There is no better friend to local music than NC State University's radio station, WKNC, 88.1 FM on your local dial. Local acts have always had a prominent place on WKNC's regular playlist, along with special programs like the Daily Local Lunch. Last weekend brought the yearly fundraiser for the station, the 8th annual Double Barrel Benefit. This year, as at the New Kings in downtown Raleigh, offerings included the stately anthem rock tones of The Old Ceremony and the classic indie rock of Hammer No More the Fingers. The next article is brought to us by The Week magazine, published on January 28, 2011. The Science of Musical Arousal. Listening to music may not be as fun as having sex, but it triggers the same pleasure-inducing chemicals in the brain. Neuroscientists at McGill University scan the brains of volunteers as they listen to their favorite instrumental music, ranging from punk to Beethoven to bagpipes. The scans revealed that as a particularly thrilling moment of the music approached, the part of the brain, striatum, region that's involved in anticipation and prediction, release the neurochemical dopamine, the same chemical that gives rise to pleasurable feelings associated with eating, sex, and psychoactive drugs. When the musical climax arrived, dopamine surged through a different part of the striatum. The study recruited only volunteers who claimed to get chills from certain musical passages, but researchers say the dopamine response is probably common to all listeners. Previous research has hinted at a link between dopamine and musical enjoyment, notes Harvard neurologist Gottfried Schlaug, who was not involved in the new finding, but the McGill study really nails it. This next article also comes to us from the magazine The Week, except this issue was February 4, 2011. Rod Stewart has become obsessed with model trains. The 66-year-old singer, who spent decades as a hard-drinking womanizer, now spends 4 hours a day playing with the 1,500-square-foot model railway system on the third floor of his Beverly Hills home. When he tours, Stewart demands that a large table be placed in his dressing room so that he can set up a scale model between performances. Sometimes, he admits, he finds himself focusing so intently on a model that it ceases to be fun.
Don't change her hair for me, not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine, stay. Today is Valentine's Day.
Rod Stewart, Valentine's Day. So, what do you know about today's featured genre, rock love songs? Probably quite a bit if you're listening to Rock Review, since almost every rock song deals with love in one way or another. Consequently, the selection of songs for inclusion in today's program is a difficult one. The Internet discloses pages and pages of sites with recommendations for Valentine's Day compilations. NPR, for example, ran a series called Listeners Pick Love Songs for Valentine's Day, in which listeners submit titles and artists and add a paragraph or two about why they selected the song, usually involving boyfriends, girlfriends, and spouses. Some of those mentioned but not included in today's program include Wonderful Tonight by Eric Clapton from 1977, I Got You Babe by Sonny and Cher from 65, Theme from A Summer Place by Percy Faith, Mellow Yellow by Donovan, and songs by Cat Power, Death Cab for Cutie, Hank Williams, Billie Holiday, Patsy Cline, The Everly Brothers, The Beach Boys, Radiohead, Foreigner, The Police, Cyndi Lauper, Benny King, Guns N' Roses, John Lennon, U2, Peter Gabriel, and Sade, to name but a few. You may remember that Tonight You Belong to Me was the song that opened today's program. And this is written for MentalFloss.com by Chris Higgins on the 18th of November, 2008. Sweetest song ever. The song Tonight You Belong to Me was written in 1926 by Billy Rose and Lee David. Gene Austin made the song a hit a year later, and it was brought back to prominence in the 1950s by various acts, Frankie Lane and the Lennon Sisters among them. At just over 2 minutes, it's short and sweet and surprisingly easy to sing. Most of us know it today because of a famous rendition from the movie The Jerk, which features Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters performing the song on a beach. Peters rocks a mean cornet solo also. Tonight You Belong to Me is a perennial cover often performed to close concerts. Today's version was brought to us by a contemporary band called The Bird and the Bee. I Will, this is the song that was played in the trivia quiz portion of today's program, and this information about that song was downloaded from Wikipedia on the 4th of February 2011, and the song comes from 1968's White Album. I Will is a song by the Beatles that was released on The Beatles. It was written by Paul McCartney and features him on lead guitar, lead vocal, and vocal bass. This quiet song required 67 takes, and George Harrison did not play. During the White Album sessions, the Beatles often recorded in separate studios. This was a love song for McCartney's future wife, Linda Eastman. I Will was one of the songs worked on by the Beatles and their associates while in Rishikesh, India. Although the music came together fairly easily, the words were worked on in India and remained unfinished, even as recording began back in London. Closing out today's program is a love song I'm sure you'll recognize. It's by Etta James, At Last, and this information comes to us from www.songfacts.com. This is about finding that one true love, and it's a very popular wedding song. Etta James was known for her amazing voice, and many people considered James the Queen of Soul before Aretha Franklin claimed that title. The songwriting team of Mack Gordon and Harry Warren wrote this in 1941 for the film musical Sun Valley Serenade. It was performed in movies by Glenn Miller and his orchestra, with vocals by Ray Eberle, and the song became a major big band hit in October 1942. The article skips down. 10 years after the original, Ray Anthony and his orchestra returned this to the charts in a version with vocals by Tommy Mercer. Etta recorded this in 1961, shortly after signing with Chess Records. Leonard Chess thought Etta was a classy ballad singer and saw pop crossover potential in her. It was his decision to back her with violin orchestrations for the song. It went all the way to number 2 on the R&B charts. Etta has battled various drug addictions through the years, but it has rarely affected her music. She was in the midst of her addictions and other personal and professional problems when At Last was recorded. It is her most enduring song, but it is not typical of her work. Many of her songs have more of a blues feel and often contain darker lyrics that reflect the challenges she's faced. Etta never gained massive popularity, but she eventually beat her 2-decade drug problems and has been cited as an influence by many young singers, including Christina Aguilera. She was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993 and is still touring and recording. Article skips down and ends with this. Knowles, Beyoncé, that is, covered this for the soundtrack of the movie Cadillac Records, which told the story of Chess Records, and Knowles sang this at Barack Obama's first dance with his wife, Michelle, during the neighborhood ball on the night of his inauguration as American president. Thanks to the interest aroused by her rendition, Beyoncé's version entered the American Hot 100 at number 67. All You Need Is Love by the Beatles from the Yellow Submarine album released in 1967. And this is from www.songfacts.com. The Beatles played this for the first time on the Our World project, the first worldwide TV special, broadcast in 24 countries on June 25, 1967. The show was 6 hours long and featured music from 6 continents, with the Beatles representing Britain. Eric Clapton mimed guitar on this during the special. The concept of the song was born out of a request to bring a song that was going to be understood by people of all nations. Lennon, All You Need Is Love, has an easy-to-understand message of love and peace. The song was easy to play, the words easy to remember. It had encompassed the feelings of the world's youth during that period. All You Need Is Love was a popular saying in the 60s anti-war movement. The song was released in the middle of the summer of love, 1967. It was a big part of the vibe. In the orchestral ending, you can hear pieces of both Greensleeves, a Bach two-part invention by George Martin, and Glenn Miller's In the Mood. Royalties were paid to Miller for his contribution. McCartney sang the chorus to the Beatles' 1963 hit, She Loves You, at the end. The article skips down. Al and Tipper Gore had this song played at their wedding. They married in 1970 and separated in 2010. George Harrison mentioned this in his 1981 song, All Those Years Ago, with the line, But you point the way to the truth when you say all you need is love. Harrison's song is a tribute to John Lennon, who was killed in 1980. Article skips down and ends with this. When asked what his favorite lyric is during an interview with NME, John Lennon's son, Sean, replied, My list of favorite things changes from day to day. I like when my dad said, There's nothing you can know that isn't known, nothing you can see that isn't shown, nowhere you can go that isn't where you're meant to be. It seems to be a good representation of the sort of enlightenment that came out of the 60s.
Sometimes when you're asleep and I'm just staring at the ceiling, I wanna reach out and touch you, but you just go on dreaming. If I could take you to heaven.
And how about this one? You and Me by Alice Cooper. Another love song for Valentine's Day. This was released in 1977, and the following is from songfacts.com. Not at all typical of Cooper, this is a very romantic soft rock song by the grandfather of goth. This song is every man's love song to his significant other, celebrating the everyday pleasures of enjoying sharing lives. This song is on my wedding CD, according to one listener. The CD plays like a concept album, from meeting to falling in love, trials, getting closer, finally getting married and looking forward. The song's lyrics very literally explain its presence on the album, the joy of the day-to-day love you share with your spouse. What a beautiful song, says another listener. It stands to show that Alice Cooper can be much more than what he appears, and that's just enough for me. It proves he is just as much of a romantic lyricist as he is a performer. Another listener says this was a change of pace from Alice Cooper's heavy metal hits. The line I remember most is, What we are is what we are. That's a true statement about people's lives in general. This song was once covered by Frank Sinatra, who, after performing it, said to Alice, You just keep writing them, kid, and I'll keep singing them. When Alice Cooper guest starred on The Muppet Show, he sung this as a duet with a very feathery Miss Piggy. Alice Cooper.
If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you? The words will never show the you I've come to know.
And how about this love song by Bread, If, released in 1971, once again from www.songfacts.com. This acoustic ballad is one of Bread's trademark tunes. Bread keyboardist David Gates says, I wrote that one night at the dining room table after my kids and wife had gone to bed. It took me about an hour and a half, with an extra verse left over. When I was done, I said, that's the best song I've ever written, and probably will be the best song I'll ever write. For me, it's really held up over time, more than any of the others.
For me, if a man could be two places at one time, I'd be with you.
Bread. And let's not forget Al Green, Let's Stay Together from 1972. This song is about an unconditional love where you are determined to stick it through good times and bad. It's a very popular wedding song. Perhaps the most famous cinematic use of the song was in the scene from the film Pulp Fiction, where it is playing in the background. It's on the stereo in the bar where we first confront Bruce Willis's poker face while Ving Rhames gives him the pride only hurt speech. It's a relatively quiet scene, so the song really has a chance to set the mood. According to Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 songs, Green wrote the lyrics in 5 minutes. However, Green didn't want to record the song, and for 2 days he argued with Willie Mitchell before finally agreeing to cut it. In 1984, Tina Turner's cover of this song revitalized her career, returning her to the charts in both the UK and US for the first time for over a decade. After explaining how he idolized Al Green growing up in Tennessee, Justin Timberlake sang this with the Reverend at the Grammy Awards in 2009, with Boyz II Men and Keith Urban joining in the song.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you.
And of course, there's Jim Croce with Time in a Bottle. And this was from the 4th of February 2011, once again from songfacts.com. This hit number one 14 weeks after Croce was killed in a plane crash. Croce started touring after he completed I Got a Name. On September 30, 1973, a plane carrying Croce and 5 other people crashed upon takeoff as he was leaving one college venue to another 70 miles away. No one survived the accident. Time in a Bottle entered the top 40 of the Billboard Hot 100 chart for the week ending December 1, 73, and finally reached number 1 for the week ending December 29th, a little over 3 months after he died. This was originally written for Croce's son Adrian when he was a baby. Adrian grew up to become the singer-songwriter A.J. Croce. This was never intended to be a single. It was released on Croce's first major label solo LP, You Don't Mess Around With Jim, back in 1972. Finally, we end today's program with a quote that may be appropriate for Valentine's Day. This is by the poet Paul Valéry, quoted in Forbes magazine and published in The Week magazine on the 11th of February 2011. Love is being stupid together. If you have a favorite artist or band or genre of rock music that you'd like to hear featured on Rock Review, leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So how'd you do on the trivia questions today? Chuck Berry originally wanted to become a professional what? Photographer. He started singing and playing in a band in order to buy cameras and photography equipment. And question number 2, what was the original titles of the Beatles' 9th album? This 1968 album was scheduled to be titled, answer A, A Doll's House, but it was discovered that a Brit band named Family had already issued an LP called Music in a Doll's House, so that title was scrapped. The resulting double album was simply issued in a plain white jacket embossed with the words The Beatle, and became known to fans as The White Album. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.